Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Jeff Williams. Jeff, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jeff, you have written a book that just came out, and it's time to an event that happened 100 years ago. The book is called Washed Away, How the Great Flood of 1913, America's Most Widespread Natural Disaster, Terrorized a Nation, and Changed It Forever. And some of our listeners maybe don't know what we're referring to. What are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the 1913 flood, which was really America's most widespread natural disaster, and it affected at least 14 states. It killed, we'll never know how many people it killed, but at least probably over 1,000 people. In Dayton, I actually have to read my own book to find the numbers, but I think it was around 300 people or 400 people. In the state of Ohio, it was around 430. And then in Ohio and Indiana, was a little over 700. Scattered states, more people. It was an amazing flood. Amazing if you like, running for your life and hiding in the attic and hoping that you don't die. But I mean, it was horrific. And it's just this incredible flood. And I think that that people, I mean, have grown up hearing about it their whole lives, I'm sure, in Dayton. But you always heard the Dayton flood because, you know, that's what people kind of, you know, they thought of it as the flood that hit their city, when actually, you know, it was a very widespread flood.
Wasn't a big part of the fact that we think of it as the Dayton flood, the fact that it was the newsreels that were all showing the horrors in Dayton, that Dayton really was kind of an epicenter of it?
Yes, yeah. In that sense, yeah, Dayton really deserves, you know, to call it the Dayton flood. But you know, it hit very badly in Columbus, Ohio, and Indianapolis. And so if you lived in Indianapolis, it was the Indianapolis flood. If you lived in Columbus, it was the Columbus flood. If you lived in Portsmouth, Ohio, you know, it was the Portsmouth flood. But yeah, Dayton was by far the worst. I mean, the water was 20 feet deep in the streets. And yeah, it's a miracle that more people weren't killed. They thought, you know, they were predicting like 10,000 people, you know, had died in the flooding in Dayton when they first, when the news got out and the whole country realized what was happening, and nobody could get through to Dayton at first, you know, with the phones. So, you know, and technically it should have been that. I mean, it's amazing that more people didn't die, but, you know, a lot of people, you know, people are resilient, and, you know, people ran for the roofs and, you know, ran for higher ground, and a lot of people saving people's lives. So, you know, it was an amazing time.
Jeff Williams joins us. His book is Washed Away. Set the stage. Let's go back 100 years. What was the weather like? Was this anticipated? What were people doing?
Sure. Well, the flood happened on March 25th, 1913. It had been raining all night, all day the day before. Started raining a little over the Easter weekend. And the storm that brought the flooding unleashed a torrent of tornadoes across the Midwest. On Easter Sunday, Omaha, about 140 people died in the tornado there. It was, I mean, this huge, terrible, you know, tornado. And then you had a city like Terre Haute, Indiana, which had about 20 people die in these tornadoes. And then later, they were flooded on. So, you know, they had a lot of fun. Kansas, you know, had tornadoes. Michigan had tornadoes. Chicago, you know, had these tornadoes. So Dayton on March 25th, you know, in that morning, they certainly, you know, people knew that the weather was bad. And, you know, people weren't, you know, they could look at the rivers and they saw the, you know, the water coming up. But they had levees, you know, along the rivers. And there had never been, there had certainly been serious flooding, but, you know, the levees, they kept building, you know, on the levees every time there was another flood, and people just, you know, they didn't think the water was going to go over the levees. So on that morning, you had, you know, people were going, kids were going to school, people were going to work. It was just a regular busy, busy day in Dayton, albeit in the rain, you know, lots of rain. And there were people, you know, they'd be walking through the street in ankle-deep water. And there were some people who were concerned about that, but other people would say, ah, you know, it gets like that when it rains, you know, nothing to worry about, nothing to worry about. But actually, you know, there was a lot to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So it was around 4:30 in the morning that that an engineer at the Platt Iron Works sounded an alarm, and people started, some of the people, you know, near the rivers started, you know, carrying things up, you know, to the second floor of their house and houses, apartments, and, you know, started preparing for things. But downtown, there were, you know, a lot of people that just, you really had no idea until around 8:30 in the morning. And I'm sure the levees probably broke a few other spots, but at 8:30 downtown, it went over, and either the levee broke or the water just sort of poured over and then broke it off. But, you know, they started seeing waves, you know, walls of waves, you know, rushing the streets.
Mm-hmm. And you can't help but see the parallel when you read this story with disasters like the more recent one along the Gulf Coast and in cities like New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina, where you have a lot of people who are economically disadvantaged who are living in very vulnerable areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although, I mean, with this flood, it really didn't discriminate because, well, in Dayton, certainly, I mean, I agree with you completely, and there were a lot of poor people who were, you know, killed in this flood. And if you were poor, you generally lived near the river, even though it's because of the flooding, you know. I mean, the rich people didn't want to live next to it, even though it was pretty to look at. You know, the land was cheap because everybody knew that at some point it would flood. So you did have a lot of poor people, you know, who were killed in this flood. But in this particular flood, if you look at it from the whole, you know, national perspective, it didn't discriminate. You were rich, poor, it didn't matter, especially, mm-hmm. and in like Dayton, when you had downtown, because it swept through, you know, really all of the downtown streets. You know, you had business people running for their lives, and, you know, and, I mean, it was a mess. There's store clerk owners, or store clerks and owners of stores, you know, swept down, you know, through the river. There's, well, the streets, which were now a river. There's one story a guy I write about named Arthur Coulter, who was carried along Second Street, and, you know, he describes being in this, like, swill of broken glass and nails and wood, and went about three blocks until he was finally picked up by a boat. And then he was one of the lucky ones, and, you know, he lived, survived. But his store was wiped out, his home was, you know, gone, and so he had to travel to Columbus, where he thought, okay, I'll be safe. But it was flooding there, of course, and then he was robbed.
Oh,
and
geez.
So he's and I didn't mention he had a broken arm.
Yeah.
So he had to backtrack near Dayton to a village called Clayton, and he borrowed money from friends, finally made it to Cleveland, where a doctor was able to set his arm. And that took about, all, you know, 3 days to do all this. And again, he's like one of the lucky ones, because a lot of people in Dayton, you know, they were stuck on the roofs with almost no food. And, you know, and sitting there for days, you know, there were people in their attics, you know, just waiting and hoping, praying that, you know, they wouldn't drown in their own attic.
The book is Washed Away. Jeff Williams wrote it. He joins us on the program today as we approach the centennial of the Great Flood that devastated Dayton. And as Jeff has pointed out, a wide area, many states, many cities, many towns affected by this. And there's so many stories in this book, so many subplots. Early on, you talk about the little kid that got in the water and got sucked into the storm sewer and got swept for blocks and came mm-hmm. back out and somehow lived. You've got all these people fighting the effects of the flood. I guess another thing that reminded me a lot of Katrina was the fact that, number one, you've got all this water. Number two, you've got people who are taking advantage of the situation, whether it's looting, whether it's shaking down people for money to save them. You had corrupt police officers who were demanding bribes to rescue people. I think one of my favorite stories in the book is the one where the guy pulls up in the boat to some guy on his roof and he offers to let him on the boat. And he says, but it'll cost you $100. And the guy goes, oh, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I can't afford that. And so then a little bit later, they see the boat going by with the guy, the shakedown artist, in the boat, and he's dead because he's obviously tried to shake down the wrong person.
Right.
And got shot for his extortion attempt. I mean, I went, whoa, this is amazing stuff. Where did you find all this?
Oh, a lot of newspapers. I mean, this was really very well covered. The entire country, they were sending their reporters down there, and then of course, whenever I could, I looked at diaries and you mentioned the kid in the storm drain. I wasn't able to do this a lot, but with him, I was able to talk to one of his relatives. And, and she gave me a little more information, and it was a story that kid, he grew up and would tell it at family reunions every year and that sort of thing.
I think one of the most fascinating subplots in this story, and probably one of the better known ones, is the one that involves the legendary John Patterson of National Cash Register. He was in a lot of trouble. He was in, to use a Bushism, deep doo-dah when the flood hit.
Yes, he was going to go to jail. He had been tried in court, for these antitrust issues, I'll call them, where he was basically trying to set up a monopoly and overrule, run the entire cash register universe. John Patterson owned NCR, the National Cash Register Company, and he was a great businessman, by every account, a fine human being, but he was really competitive, very ambitious, and wanted to do everything he could to run the best business he could, and pretty much wipe out his competitors, and he did a lot of things that were not very ethical. A lot of his salespeople did a lot of things like, setting up a store, selling cash registers right next to another store, selling them. And he would completely, they would practically give them away. So they put out, put a competitor out of business. So anyway, I mean, I could go on for an hour what he did, but the judge sentenced him to a year in jail and I think a pretty hefty fine, and he was going to appeal it, but things were looking pretty bad for him, when the flood hit. I mean, this all went down about a month earlier in court. So, but then he really redeemed himself, because when the flood hit, NCR was on top of a hill, and it was also kind of, you'd almost, during the flood, it basically functioned as a second government. And before the flood, it was known as, the place where you could go if you needed help. It was, people thought very highly of the company. And so anyway, the levees start crumbling from the water, and the rivers are flooding the streets, and so people start running to NCR thinking that maybe it'll help them, and sure enough, they did. And Patterson literally took it upon himself to virtually become, the second mayor, of the city, where the real mayor of Dayton was trapped in his own house and, couldn't do much at all. Uh-huh. So John Patterson, who was about 70 at the time, turned his factory into, a rescue relief center. They started building boats, sent their men out to, rescue people. John Patterson went out himself and rescued a few people. For the longest time, I didn't think that was true. I thought, well, it's got to be an urban legend or, something they made up. But I do believe that he went out and probably saved one or two people, just from everything I've read. But But he was very, very, very involved. And so by the time the flood ended, people were like saying, you cannot send this guy to jail. And he kept saying, you know, look, I don't want a pardon, because like everybody said, you know, the governor or the president, somebody's got to pardon him. He said, I want to, you know, go to court. And eventually it was all worked out, and he never did go to jail. But he didn't get a pardon either. I mean, he won an appeal at some point.
Yeah, that's really an amazing part of the story. It's Washed Away, How the Great Flood of 1913, America's Most Widespread Natural Disaster, Terrorized a Nation and Changed It Forever. Jeff Williams wrote it, and a lot of us around here think it was just the Dayton Flood of 1913, but it affected a lot of people, and you do a magnificent job of taking us all around the stricken area and giving us anecdotal evidence of the impact of this disaster on all kinds of individual people. You've got the names, you've got the event, you've got the incidents, and it's really fascinating and a little terrifying to read because it was just so easy to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it was so easy to die, period, you know, in 1913. I mean, if disease didn't get you, you know, something would. I mean, there's a reason we have so many safety regulations right now. I mean, you could die on, you know, working, you could die, you know, just walking to school, you know, horse could run over you, horse and buggy or whatever. So, I mean, it was a pretty dangerous world anyway. But then when the flood came, you know, it was, I keep saying people were running for their lives. That's a cliche, but it's so true. I mean, there was a Flossie Lester, who was a stenographer, and there's a great story that I came across and, you know, put that in the book where she climbed onto a horse and buggy with some other men, and the flood knocked over, you know, the horse and buggy, and everyone was swept away, and we never know what happened to these other men. But Flossie spotted a horse swinging for his life, and she was able to grab the strap that was dangling from the horse and climb onto him. And I was thinking, she must have been in great physical condition, because I don't think that would have been my fate. But she climbed onto the horse, and the horse swam for half a mile and a half and got her to a farm. She meets, you know, this family there, and she passes out. And, you know, and then she comes, you know, around later, and she wanted to buy the horse. I don't know if she ever found the owner. But, yeah, I mean, there were just so many amazing stories of people who did everything they could, you know, to save themselves. And then, as you know, a lot of people who saved other people. I mean, you know, like Patterson, when he sent people out, and this was going around city, you know, city after city after city, there were rescuers who would go out and save, you know, people, like hundreds of people. And they would be capsized, you know, in the floodwaters. And, you know, everybody would, hopefully, everybody would scramble onto the boat and they'd get back to shore. And then these same rescuers would go out again and, you know, and try to save people. And that's one of the things I found just amazing. And I understand that, you know, you're going to do what you have to do. And these are your neighbors and, you know, in a sense, your family. And, you know, you want to help people. So in a way, it's not surprising. But it is admirable that so many people, you know, risk their lives over and over and over again to, you know, to save perfect strangers.
It must have been an incredible adrenaline rush to just keep going out there and finding these dire situations and making the difference between life and death. It's just an amazing story. And, of course, this is an act of whatever you want to call it, God, nature, Mother Nature. But there was an impact that was man-made, was there not?
Yeah, there were a lot of problems that man sort of contributed to all of this. One was garbage and in the rivers. People would dump, you know, just everything, you know, that was sort of the landfill of the time for a lot of cities. They would just dump their refuse, you know, in the river and think nothing of it. But the flood or the rivers, the currents would take the garbage, and it had to go somewhere, and often it would just sort of get stuck in the riverbank, and you would have sort of these man-made dams. And that, I mean, it just, that often hurt the flow of the river. The, you know, when all the flooding began, I mean, if the garbage hadn't been there, I'm sure there still would have been, you know, some serious flooding, but it might have been less because you had so many rivers that were blocked up and kind of dammed already. And, you know, and full already simply because so much of the garbage was impeding the, you know, the flow of the rivers.
You also had all the trees that had been cut down, and they could have been absorbing some of the rain, right?
Yes, absolutely. And buildings that were right up against the flood. There was no kind of natural place for, you know, the water to go. And I thought I had one other point, but there were just a lot of things that people did that, yeah, could have been, could have alleviated the problem somewhat. Oh, I was just going to say, if there was really no flood control other than these levees, and, you know, after the flood, and you were probably going to get to this, but, or ask me about this, but, you know, they brought in Arthur Ernest Morgan, the civil engineer, and he designed the Miami Conservancy District flood control system, and, you know, had a series of dams that, you know, protected Dayton ever since. And so they didn't have, you know, anything like that either. So there were a lot of things that, you know, people could have done, you know, that might have, you know, lessened the disaster. But I think the garbage was certainly just right up there, you know, the sense just how, I mean, looking back on it, you just think how stupid, you know, that was.
Yeah. And of course, Arthur Morgan was a genius who created this wonderful system that has kept Dayton safe from flooding ever since. And then he went on to a stellar career as the president of Antioch College. And by an amazing coincidence, this interview is airing on the Antioch radio station in Yellow Springs. It's just a big old circle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My guest is Jeff Williams. The book is Washed Away, How the Great Flood of 1913, America's Most Widespread Natural Disaster, Terrorized a Nation and Changed It Forever. And Jeff is a wonderful example of somebody who knows how to get an interview on this program. He contacted me a really long time ago and said, I'm going to be putting out this book. I got an advance copy of the book. I got a finished copy of the book. He got back in touch with me. He gave me lots of advance notice before the centennial of the Great Flood, and here we are.
Wow. Well, thanks.
Very good. That is textbook stuff.
Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you having me on here. It's been it's just a thrill to tell people about the flood. I mean, it's really a forgotten piece of history.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, because I understand that you are a writer, a journalist, and you have another book that was quite interesting that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a freelance journalist. I live in Loveland, Ohio, and grew up in Middletown. So, you know, so I've been to Dayton a gazillion times and kind of grew up hearing about the flood, you know, throughout my life. But yeah, I'm a freelance writer. I do a lot of writing for U.S. News and World Report and Reuters, and have written for, you know, CNN Money and Entertainment Weekly and just things like, you know, just, I don't know, a lot of publications. And the book that I have that came out a few years ago is actually being reissued as a paperback and an audiobook. It's coming out May 30th. But that's C.C. Pyle's Amazing Foot Race, which was just this, it's just this wonderful, I mean, I don't take credit for it's a nonfiction narrative of a wonderful event that happened in 1928, where this man, C.C. Pyle, decided it'd be interesting to have a foot race across the entire country. And 199,200 people showed up for this. And the prize money was $25,000 to whoever came in first. And so he organized this crazy race that took like 3 months, because they would run from one spot to another, you know, and sleep for the night, and then run from another spot to another and, you know, sleep for the night. And it's, you know, it's this incredible, true, but so crazy it shouldn't be true story of these runners who ran like, I mean, for 90 days, they did not take one day off. They ran every day, often you know, like the average would be 30 miles a day.
Wow.
So, you know, that's over a marathon a day. And there were some days near the end, they were running like 50 miles a day, 60 miles.
Wow.
And, you know, their feet are falling off. And And of course, not everybody made it, but a lot did. And it's just this, and they ran across, you know, Ohio. They followed Route 66, and then they got up to, once that was gone, they've sort of followed state routes and went through Cleveland and made it to New York City. And, it's a C.C. Pyle's Amazing Foot Race, if I didn't say that. And,
wow.
So I'm really proud of that book, too.
Jeff Williams wrote that one, too, and he's been on the Book Nook today. He just mentioned that he lives in Loveland, and this is the third time Loveland's been mentioned on this program recently. A couple weeks ago, we had a guest who was talking about the Loveland Castle.
Oh, yeah.
And a while back, we had a fellow who wrote a novel that features the Loveland Frog. Are you familiar with the Loveland Frog?
I don't think I am.
Look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I will.
You'll be amazed.
Okay.
By the Loveland Frog.
Okay. I mean, I know the Loveland Castle. I've been there a million times, but okay. Loveland Frog.
The Loveland Frog.
Okay.
Yes. 100 years ago this week, the residents of Dayton, Ohio, and many communities in the Midwest were having a really bad day with terrible flooding. They call it the Great Flood of 1913. Jeff Williams has written about it in his book, Washed Away. And Jeff, they weren't having fun 100 years ago, but as a journalist, this must have been a really enjoyable project for you to do the research on this book and come up with all this information.
A really fun book to write. And I'm just, and in 1913 was just a really interesting place to be immersed in for so long. I didn't want the book to end. I mean, I didn't want to finish the book in a weird way, and I wanted to keep working on it, and I kept thinking, God, I wish I'd thought to write this like 20 years ago, and I could have been writing it for 20 years. But I did want it to get out, in time for the anniversary. So,
well, Jeff, I've got to compliment you on your use of a verb there when you said you got immersed in the flood story. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and we've been immersed in Washed Away, how the Great Flood of 1913, America's most widespread natural disaster, terrorized the nation and changed it forever. Just published by Pegasus Books, right in time for the centennial of that massive disaster in the Midwest. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Tune in next week for a very special edition of the program. We'll be talking to an author who has just published his first book, and this will be the very first interview he's ever done, and it's a very special book. In fact, it's the best book I've read in a long time. His name is Ben Miller, and the book is called Riverbend Chronicle, The Junkification of a Boyhood Idol Amid the Curious Glory of Urban Iowa. It's the Book Nook with Ben Miller next week, right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.